While you're getting ready and have a seat, we'll just call the case. It's A23-1068, Farkash versus Kleinschmidt. Counsel, as the appellant or the respondent did not submit a brief, we have issued an order that the respondent will not have oral argument this morning. But counsel for appellant, you do have the opportunity to present oral argument this morning. I'd ask that you identify yourself and your client before you begin speaking. You'll have 15 minutes for your argument. And these matters are being recorded, and that is the only recording that is permitted.
Okay, thank you.
All right, anytime you're ready, counsel.
Okay. My name is Craig, C-R-A-I-G, middle initial E. Last name is Shriver, S-H-R-I, V as in Victor, E-R, appearing on behalf of the appellant in this case. And her name is Angela Rose Farkash. Her last name is spelled F-A-R-K-A-S-H. And she is also present and seated at counsel table to my right.
Actually, we only allow attorneys before the bar, so if we can just have a seat in the gallery, that'd be great. Thank you very much. Go ahead, counsel.
Okay. May it please the court, and good morning. This, as the court noted earlier, just a few minutes ago, this is an appeal that is unopposed in this case, essentially. The respondent did not file a brief, is not here today, and we can ask, well, why are we here if he's not opposing this appeal? Well, there is something that I just wanted to flesh out as part of the record, and...
Just to clarify, though, respondent hasn't agreed to that we shouldn't review this. I mean,
That's correct.
Still have to review it and rule according to the law, even without a respondent's brief.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to make that clear. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor, and thank you for making that clarification. I do appreciate that. This is an appeal from an order finding my client in constructive civil contempt, issued in a proceeding, in a harassment restraining order proceeding. The issue in that case was whether or not my client violated the order and whether or not she could be brought into compliance with the underlying order. When the respondent in this case filed his motion for a finding of contempt, there was a harassment restraining order that existed. Unfortunately, a few days later for the respondent in this case, it had expired. So by the time the hearing was held, there was no underlying order to enforce. And the basic law in Minnesota is that there must be some sort of underlying order in which to bring a alleged contemptor into compliance.
And I mean, the way that I think about contempt is that if there is a court order in place, and while the court order is enforceable, someone violates that order, it is within the district court's discretion, depending upon the findings that the district court makes, to hold the violating party in contempt for the violation of that order, which was enforceable at the time of the alleged infraction. The fact that the order may have expired at some later date doesn't negate the fact that a party may have violated the court order. So how, I understand your argument that the order has expired by the time the district court had time on its calendar to address this situation, but it doesn't undermine the essence of the reason for the contempt order. How do we address that?
Your Honor, thank you very much for that question. Before we determine whether or not the court should issue an order for contempt, with or without an underlying enforceable order, we have to really determine what sort of contempt we're looking at. It's undisputed that this was a civil contempt proceeding.
Let's put the criminal piece aside. Let's talk about civil contempt for violation of a civil order.
The primary purpose of a constructive civil contempt proceeding is to bring an alleged contemnor into compliance with an order. With no order, it's impossible to bring an alleged contemnor into compliance with an order. And yes, a court...
The only purpose of a contempt order to bring someone into compliance with the order?
Well, as I said in my brief, it is the sine qua non. You can, and of course, bring other issues before the court in a constructive civil contempt proceeding, such as it's very common to bring an award of attorney's fees or make a request for attorney's fees. Or you can issue some other order. You can issue sanctions, as they did in the Iron Waffle case. The court has great latitude in what it can do, but what it is doing, it is coercing or trying to secure compliance with an order. And with no valid underlying order, it's impossible. And I would say that after the order is expired, that is correct. If it is then in the state's hands, if there's no order in which to bring an alleged contemnor into compliance, we're outside of the territory of a constructed civil contempt proceeding. And yes, to secure justice or proper exercise of the power of contempt is still available to the court, but in a criminal contempt proceeding, the rule is the alleged contemnor is entitled to a jury trial, is entitled to guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, and prosecution by the state. That is available to the state and to a judge properly situated in a court like that to make a finding of contempt. But this was undisputably a civil proceeding, not a criminal proceeding. Could you repeat the question?
I'm sorry, it's a long question. So the district court said, I mean, it's almost like a mootness analysis. Well, it's not moot because a determination by the district court that your client was in violation, was in contempt of the order, civil contempt for violating the order, that's relevant to an extension of the harassment restraining order or obtaining a new one under the, I can't remember which subdivision, the D something, subdivision subdivision 5D. Does that make any sense? So the court was saying, I'm going to proceed even though I know that the order is now expired because it has other relevance. And so why is that not a valid justification, even though the district court could no longer set purge conditions to force your client to come into compliance because the order had expired by the time the court ruled on it?
If I understand the court's question correctly, if I may rephrase it.
Yes, but please do.
Okay. I believe the question is, can a court properly exercise its contempt powers if it enhances the ability of a party to prevail?
It's really more of a mootness analysis, that there is a vindication of respondents' rights by finding your client in contempt, even though the order is not civil contempt, even though the order is now expired, because it can, you know, if they want an extension of harassment restraining order, there's still a reason to proceed. I'm sorry for taking so long.
Okay, yeah.
But that is what the district court pointed to.
Okay, it seems like the question is, to answer that, and I hate to answer a question with another question, is when the order expired, the respondent's rights expired as well. And if the contempt power that the court was exercising was to vindicate the rights of the respondent, by the time the court made that determination, he had no rights under the order because there is no order and therefore no rights.
Okay.
The concern that I have is that Minnesota courts are busy. District courts are very busy. And it's oftentimes difficult to get a case or on a calendar on an emergency basis. And so essentially, the argument that you're proposing creates an escape hatch towards the end of a harassment restraining order, for example, or any court order. As the order is about to expire, someone can violate the order because they know they're not going to face any consequences in court because there's just no ability to get a hearing such that a judge can make a contempt ruling in a timely manner before it expires. Is that doesn't feel right to me, that it gives someone an opportunity to violate court orders without any consequences whatsoever?
Well, if there is a violation of the court order, and the order has expired, it doesn't mean that there are no consequences out there.
Well, what would be the remedy?
The remedy would be to bring a criminal contempt proceeding.
Well,
against her.
That's not the decision that a court can make. I mean, a court can't initiate its own criminal action.
No, the court can't.
So it's dependent upon local prosecutor.
That's right. Once we're into criminal.
Also busy.
It could be busy. The criminal prosecutor may be busy, but if indeed there was a violation of the order and a criminal prosecutor today decided to prosecute the appellant, I don't think the statute of limitations has run out on that. There are consequences that are available. If there is contempt available out there, and there very well could be, the contempt remedy may still be available. It doesn't matter whether the order expired. It matters what realm we're in right now when we are in civil constructive contempt. And yes, the court has some authority. Yes, the court can do this, but there is a remedy available. And there's also, yes, You mentioned the escape hatch issue. Everyone knew that this order was going to expire. He could have applied for an extension, and if he applied for the extension, that could have sustained a constructive civil contempt proceeding. But if he's waiting right before the expiration of the order to bring his constructive civil contempt claim, there is the issue of latches. He has waited too long to really forge a remedy for himself. Had he brought this not so close to the expiration of his order and his rights, very well he could have proved up a constructive civil contempt claim, and we could be in a very, very different position had he actually brought this earlier.
Counsel, your time has expired. Judge Riley has one additional question.
So you argue that Minnesota Statute 588.10 applies to criminal contempt.
That's right.
Not civil contempt. Therefore, the fine is unenforceable, or was illegal fine because your client wasn't found in criminal contempt.
That's right.
Okay, but then my second question, or my question is, do you think that 588.11, the award of attorney's fees, applies only in criminal contempt situations, or do you think it also applies in civil contempt? Or why doesn't it apply in civil contempt?
That is a new issue. The statute that authorizes an award of attorney's fees.
Well, it's not a new issue. You brief it at page
yes.
3 and 4 of your brief. Briefly.
I believe that the statute, the 588.11, applies to, is available for those, they use the term guilty of contempt. My client is not guilty of the contempt she was facing, which is constructive civil contempt, because there is no underlying order to enforce. And since she's not guilty of contempt within the confines of a constructive civil contempt case, then yes, that is an abuse of discretion, because there was no, it was not really, the court really can't make that finding that she's guilty when there's no underlying order to enforce, which is a necessary component of a constructive civil contempt claim. So yes, it was an abuse of discretion to award attorney's fees. I just want to note, my client also made a request for attorney's fees. That was denied. No abuse of discretion. That's fine.
All right. Any other questions from the panel? All right. Thank you very much, counsel. The matter has been submitted. We'll issue an opinion within the statutory time period.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you as well. And that concludes our calendar, and we are adjourned. Thank you.
All rise.